I have the privilege of being your missions pastor. And I'm one of the things I'm really thankful for today are unexpected friends, okay? So probably, I'm sitting here trying to think, about 30 years ago, something like that, a young couple who are doing church planting in Thailand get a prompting to go visit a refugee camp in northern Thailand. And they meet one little girl, and it changes their lives. Fast forward about a couple more decades, and I meet that man. And God gets hold of my heart for what's going on there in Thailand and Burma. And I come and share it with you folks, and for lots and lots of you, it's changed you. And so we have the privilege today of having my friend Steve Gamer here. And he's going to tell us what's going on with part of our family, about a group that has just gone through a really hard time and how we can be helpful to them. But he's also going to bring words of encouragement and hope to us that God's on the throne, he's in charge, and things are changing. And we can continue to be part of that. So let me just pray for our friend Steve right now as he comes and shares. Father God, thank you for Steve and for partners and for all that's going on there. We pray for the team that's at work in Thailand, in Myanmar, in Bangladesh, and in the Middle East, Lord. Bless them today for their work. Give them fruit for their labors. May they sense your presence. And Lord, we give us hearts to hear everything we need to hear today. And may we be changed because of our new friend that we're meeting today, Steve. Thank you, brother.
Thank you. If you want to get encouraged, built up, and feel like a giant, go hang out with that guy. To love is to act. When our words match our actions, love is something understandable. To love is to act. When we do what we say, the world has changed around us. To love is to act is the deathbed statement of Victor Hugo, who wrote Les Miserables. But it is also, in my opinion, the five-word description of what the Bible's message is all about. Jesus was asked twice how to go to heaven, and I believe his answer was to love is to act. He said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself." When those two things are congruent, love is not a sentiment. It is an unstoppable magnetic force. That's kind of like Love Placentia. You're all wearing these t-shirts and you all go out into the community and you're acting on the impulse of love. You're not just talking about how much Jesus cares. You're planting a flower of love, not just in the dirt yesterday, you who planted trees and flowers. You're painting a wall of love, not just on a building that needed paint. You're cleaning a place that was dirty, not just to make it shine again. You are demonstrating love. And I believe that you're walking in the greatest tradition, the greatest transformational tradition that's ever existed. In the 30s, my great-grandfather was fired from AEG, General Electric. That's the European division of General Electric. His offense was that he was overheard talking on the bus on his way to work in Frankfurt about the Reichstag fire, which the Third Reich, or the Nazi Party, blamed on the Jews. And he was talking about how unfair it was and how these political changes have marginalized the Jewish people. He was a faithful Lutheran, and he was married to a woman from Spain, and he thought that he could kind of inch through this moment in fascist history, kind of under the radar, even though he was Jewish. And when he was overheard on the bus, he was fired from AEG after a long interrogation by some intelligence officers. And so he knew that the violence that was happening in pockets was going to turn into generalized violence. And so he packed his family up, including my grandmother, who was at the time 13 years old. He packed them up and he moved to Spain, where his wife is from. And some German colleagues at AEG gave him work. And that's how they survived those few years when they lived in Spain, hoping to ride through this, again, fascist moment in history and make it. And these wonderful German colleagues of him were the financial mechanism for him to keep his family fed. But unfortunately, y'all know this name, Franco. This guy came to power and he cut a deal with Hitler, and then they built trains together to bring back the undesirables from Spain into Germany for re-education, concentration into these camps. When that happened, my great-grandfather knew again that his family was in trouble, but the only way to get out of Spain had to do with getting through Germany. I don't remember why. But they made this trek through Germany, and the only reason they survived getting through Germany was a German family that acted on the impulse of love. Why? Because to love is to act. You know, some Jewish person comes through your city and you see that they're in trouble. It's nice to tell them Jesus loves them and give them a gospel tract. That's actually not what they need. They need to see love, concrete love demonstrated. They need to see something tangible. And this family sheltered them, gave them a place to stay for the night, and then got them through the border into Mussolini's Italy, the last country to fall in World War II, right? Well, unfortunately, Mussolini also joined the fascist club and cut a deal with Hitler, built a train to take the undesirables back home for concentration and re-education. And so, again, my great-grandfather negotiated a visa for Beijing. Did you know Beijing was taking Jews during the war? And so he got a passage on what was then called a steamship, I guess presumably because it was run by steam. And I have a copy of the ticket with my great-grandfather, great-grandmother, and their three children all listed on this ticket, a passage on the steamship, whatever the name it was. So they're on their way to China, and in Madras, they docked in Madras, India, and then the Royal Air Force people who were stationed there, again, fighting the war, they knew that the Jews were on the run, and any time they could come up with a reason to give them a visa and protect them, they did that. So notice was sent on board this steamship that two visas would be granted to two Jews who are running from the Third Reich to be house help in this family of Royal Air Force family from England. And my 13-year-old grandmother raised her hands, and so did my 8-year-old, whatever he is, my grandmother's brother, 8-year-old brother. They raised their hand, they got the visas, they ended up working, early childhood labor, I guess, and they got a job in Madras, and they rode out the war. My great-grandfather went to China. My grandmother stayed in Madras. When the war was over, they put them in prison because they held German passports. They were prisoners of war. That's a whole other story. That Royal Air Force family, though, may have saved my grandmother's life. What is that? To love is to act. To say that we love God and not act is a dereliction of the whole message of Jesus. It trivializes the cross. In 1994, I hiked into a refugee camp, and it was not a planned missional trip. I was told by this wonderful Anglican woman about the war in Burma, and invited to go and meet these Karen tribal people who were persecuted. And so my young wife and I agreed to go. We packed our little backpacks, and it was a 12-hour bus ride to get there. We hiked into this camp, and were introduced to poverty on a scale that we had never experienced before. You know what it's like. I mean, war. Your village is burned down. Your wife was killed after she was tortured and sexually violated. Your brother didn't make it for whatever reason. And you, with nothing but the clothes on your back, show up into this camp full of parasites because you've been not caring for your hygiene while you've been on the run, away from the black-booted soldiers. So I met these people for the first time in my life. And again, that story coincided with my personal story. I'm the first son born on U.S. soil. The United States gave my family a place to live, and they moved to San Francisco, and I was born there. I was Omi's angel. Omi is German for grandmother. And my great-grandmother says that she stayed alive just to hold me. Firstborn, free son of this family, having survived three dictators. They like to say that, actually. I survived three dictators. So my story melted into this refugee story, and for me, for the first time, I became aware that their story is my story. And so I met this lady named Rose. That's a picture of her on the screen with about 2 years into our relationship, some of the children that she took in. Well, when we met her, there was a child sleeping on her bamboo floor. And this little girl was found by pro-democracy soldiers who hiked to the village that was reportedly attacked to find survivors and document what happened. And when they got there, they found no survivors. Many of them ran and joined at the time, 4 million internally displaced refugees just living in the jungle, hiding and trying to avoid contact with the army. Or they died when the Burma army attacked and burned down their village. When these soldiers got to that village in a good hiding place, presumably hidden by a loved one, this 4-year-old little girl had been waiting for the good guys to show up. They picked her up and carried her for 3 days to the Moy River, crossed the Moy River down the Shoglo stream to Shoglo refugee camp, which was where I met this little girl sleeping on the floor of Rose Moo's bamboo hut. And I heard this story as we drank tea, and Rose looked up at us, told us this story, and said, "Steve and Audney, would you help me help this little girl?" And I asked, "Well, what would that look like?" I was doing church planting. I helped start a few churches in a YWAM base in Chiang Mai, Thailand. And refugee work was completely out of my conceptual reality. It wasn't something I was thinking about. But Rose looked up and told us this story, asked us if we would help this little girl. And what would you say? Yes, of course. It's a beautiful child. Let's be a part of love. Because what? To love is to act. We say we love God. We've got to love our neighbor. And who's our neighbor according to Luke chapter 10? It's the parable of the Good Samaritan. You know, our neighbor is everybody, including our enemy. Everybody in the whole world is my neighbor. And so we calculated the cost for that first little girl. It was $30 for a year. Everything she needed for a year. And even me, working with Youth Without Any Money, that's what YWAM stands for, I could afford $30. And we committed to that girl. And what happens when you commit to one vulnerable little child in a war zone? Word gets out super fast. And so the soldiers began bringing children that they found unaccompanied, either on the battlefield or lost in the jungle. They brought her to Rose. And so a couple times a month when we would go there, Rose would say, "Hey, we've got 4 more kids." So Namukapaw. She was found sleeping in a pig pen. Again, the only known survivor from her village, about 6 years old. Had no idea how old she was for many reasons, but she was the only known survivor. She didn't talk for about a year, completely traumatized. Namukapaw needed a home. Can we invite her into our home? Well, yes. The answer is yes. Why? Because to love is to act. Within a few years, Rose had 67 children living in her home. Within 4 years, our little team that grew out of this experience were managing 12 homes in 8 refugee camps for over 1,000 children. It just kept snowballing. Word got out that there's a place for vulnerable children. What's that sound like to you? Good news! To love is to act. And so we just kept saying, okay, we're going to keep begging our family and friends for another $30. That's what it was. That's how it all started. You know, we have 65 full-time staff now, and 4 of them are supported by Rose Drive. And we've got Brittany joining us, starting as an intern, but very likely turning into a lifelong commitment if you're as nuts as we are. And what's going to happen? Rose Drive gets more involved with partners. So the main thing I wanted to say today is thank you. Thanks for being a part of my story, a part of their story, a part of that first little girl. When I was there, you were there. So I'd like to switch gears a little bit and look at a passage in Scripture. Y'all know the passage from Matthew 25, the sheep and the goats. You've heard that one? If you're old enough, you listened to Keith Green and felt convicted when he pounded on the piano singing this parable. Actually, theologians would argue it's not a parable. It's an eschatological statement about what happens at the end of times. When the Son of Man comes in His glory and all the angels with Him, He will sit on His glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before Him, and He will separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on His right and the goats on His left. Then the King will say to those on His right, "Come, you who are blessed by My Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." You know that Jesus didn't actually invent service to the poor. He was on a long history of God's concern for the widow, the alien, the orphan, and the poor. It was built into the Hebrew tribe that if you didn't help those people, you were not a part of a just or Christ-following society. Farmers were instructed to leave the corner of their farms because it belonged to the poor. Olive growers were instructed that you could pass the grove for the first harvest, but the second pass, those not ripe enough to pick or those too rotten and left behind, that belonged to the poor. That is a part of a just society, according to Deuteronomy. And you see through the entire Old Testament and through the prophets that the people close to God care for these categories of people at the bottom of society. In the Old Testament, it's the widow, the alien, the orphan, and the poor, right? In the New Testament, it's referred to in these metaphorical or parable terms, but it's also referred to as Jesus steps up to announce His ministry in Luke chapter 4. And what does He say? He says, Isaiah 58, "I have come to set the captives free. I have come to be good news to the poor," echoing these words from the prophet Isaiah. "I have come that the poor, that the lame would walk and the blind eyes would see and that the poor would hear good news." This was His mission. And He lived that out through His whole life. And as He comes to the end of His life in His last big sermon, that's what this is, He finishes the sermon after three parables. He comes to this. Readiness, readiness to join God in heaven, readiness when God is present to the world we live in has to do with being present to the poor. And these six categories of love, you know what we have here? I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink, a stranger and you invited me in, clothes. Sounds a lot like yesterday to me, these black t-shirts that are all over the room. Love Placentia, bunch of sheep. These six categories, though, are they exclusive? No, they're general. He's just drawing out. You know, you stop on the side of the road for a woman who appears to be distressed, who has a flat tire, and you help her change that tire. That's sheep-like behavior. The single mother sitting next to you who doesn't need to hear that Jesus loves her again, what she really needs is a 50 so she can buy groceries today. That's sheep-like behavior. That's the behavior of the people that Jesus wants to hang out with. I used to think of this parable in terms of the grace versus works debate. You know, saved by grace or saved by works. And I used to use this parable or this event as the works side of the debate. But you know what Jesus is saying here? If you just read it like straightforward, really carefully, all He's saying is that people who follow Me do that. It's that simple. People who follow Me do this stuff. To love is to act. Don't say you love Me and don't help these people. You say you love Me, get involved, engage, do something, act. That lady in that picture Some of you may remember Brad Hazlett. He's here this morning. He's the director of all of our operations in the world. And he and I were on the porch of, her name was Hafaz. I can't remember. Hafaz, I think, was her name. Single mother, had three beautiful children. Her husband died of tuberculosis before the violence that erupted in 2012, where thousands of people were killed, villages burned down, a city was bulldozed. They were hurt. The survivors were herded out into a floodplain surrounded by barbed wire and kept to slowly die. And that's one of the residents of that population right there. When we got there, they hadn't eaten, and they had a bowl with food for dinner. The bowl was a watery broth. That's all they had for dinner. This was the day we arrived. And we had known about her because she's got a really tough life. She's a single mother, three beautiful children. More than that, she, because of desperation, she signed up to go with some traffickers to go to Malaysia. That's the dream. Go to Malaysia and get a job and earn money. Get your kids through school. She took all three of her children on a trafficker's boat, took a small boat to a bigger ship, waiting for the ship to fill up. But this was a year when the traffickers had a rough time because the news wires reported on what was going on and the violence happening against these people and the exploitation because of violence that was happening. They couldn't fill the boat. And so after being abused, she said her children were beaten with cables. They were violated. All these terrible things happened on this ship. The owners of that ship had to get out of that water, and so they sent these displaced people back to shore. Imagine that. You've said goodbye to everyone. You've sold what meager possessions you might have had. You've gotten on the ship. Then you've lived through this terrible abuse and sent back to shore hungry. And with nothing, and in her case, without a husband. And so we saw that she was hungry and she didn't have any access to drinking water. There was no one where for them to use the bathroom. And so our team immediately bought rice for her. If you go out on the table after the service, you'll see what we give to a family of five that will last a month. 50 pounds of rice and these bowls that you'll see on the table out there, these food things that we give, chili peppers and onions and garlic and just a few things. That's a month. And that's what we gave her that day. And then our team also put a well in so that she and her neighbors could have water and built an outhouse for her. And for me, it's an example of where we hit. We don't always hit. We also don't always succeed. But when I thought of the people who have embodied what I'm trying to talk about this morning, the sheep and the goats, this was a great sheep home run. Because this lady understood God and his love in real terms. We got involved with her life. We actually helped her start a small business so that she could support her family and not have to be waiting for food every month. She was extremely intelligent and motivated. The story of this woman has to do with loving and acting. To love is to act. And she's one of those Rohingya people that you've heard about. Back to the sheep and the goats. Then these righteous ones will reply, Lord, when did we ever see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink, or a stranger and show you hospitality, or naked and give you clothing? When did we ever see you sick or in prison and visit you? And the king will say, I tell you the truth, when you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you were doing it to me. My brothers and sisters there, almost universally by theologians, that is the poor. Standing ready to be present to God has to do with serving the poor and the needy. The picture that you see on that slide is a guy that is a living hero, and because of our relationship with him, we got him sent to prison for 2 years. So next time I'm here, I'll tell you that story. Did you notice that they came back in Jesus' telling? When he says it, he gives this rhetorical literary feature. He says, Lord, when did we know? And I think what Jesus is saying there is that they were so present to to loving and acting that they weren't keeping track of what they did. And that was kind of Pharisee-Sadducee behavior, right? Aha, cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. I loved my neighbor, keeping track of all those things, kind of keeping the scales of love equal. And what Jesus is celebrating is those of us like Greg, who is a great example of this, who just constantly look for ways and means to love. And I imagine that there's a lot of us here. There's a high density of that sitting in this room. You who are just constantly on the lookout for how do we walk this thing out? How do we love people? I see your smile, and I think you got to be one of those guys. That was actually a person. So 2012, there was this violence, and all of these terrible things happen. In 2017, August 25th, 17 villages were on fire when this picture was taken. That's a village of 700 families, and that village was burned to the ground. That's what it looks like from the air. And in order to describe this drama a little bit better, I've got a short video for you.
1 year ago, on August 25th, 2017, our worst fears became reality. After years of oppressive restrictions and increasing tension with local Rakhine, authorities responded with a campaign of brutal violence against the Rohingya civilian population as a whole. More than 200 Rohingya villages were burned, an estimated 24,000 Rohingya were killed, and more than 43,000 were reported missing.
Her family is gone. Her grandkids cut into pieces and killed.
Following the attacks, 700,000 Rohingya ran for their lives and crossed the border into neighboring Bangladesh, bringing the number of Rohingya refugees to almost 1 million. Since the violence in 2017, it has become increasingly clear that Myanmar's ruthless attacks were not a spontaneous reaction to terrorism, but a premeditated event planned well in advance of any militant uprising. But despite overwhelming evidence of the genocide carried out by Myanmar police and military, the international community has been slow and inconsistent in holding the perpetrators accountable. The majority of Rohingya are now faced with an impossible decision: remain in the misery of life in a refugee camp or return to a country where their own government tried to kill them. Despite Myanmar's continued persecution of the remaining Rohingya population, the government insists that it is safe for those in Bangladesh to return home. Not surprisingly, the majority believe their oppression would only continue. So they wait in the world's largest refugee camp, gradually losing any hope that their lives will return to normal. Since the first days of the crisis, Partners has been on the ground working with friends we have come to know well in the past 6 years spent working in their communities. With your help, we have been providing critical relief supplies such as food, shelter, medicine, and access to clean water and sanitation. What were critical needs in the beginning continue to this day. But with the arrival of monsoon season, many in the camps face a new set of problems brought on by heavy rains and severe flooding. Shelters are damaged by landslides, wet food is spoiled, latrines overflow, fresh water is easily contaminated. With these added problems, the people are at a much higher risk of widespread disease. Despite significant media attention at the height of the exodus, there continues to be a massive shortfall in funding. According to the Intersector Coordination Group, the combined efforts of all humanitarian groups who are trying to care for at least 1 million people currently have only a third of the funding required to keep those people alive. As we mark 1 year since the crisis escalated, we're determined not to let the world forget our friends. We are compelled by love to take action, to care for the Rohingya as we do our own family. We want to provide these people with more than just the strength to live another day. We want to give the feeling of security that comes in knowing the next meal is taken care of, and the hope that comes in knowing they are not forgotten. While their future remains uncertain and the fight for justice continues, we will continue to stand alongside the Rohingya to remind them they are loved and to share their story with the world.
Rose Drive Church has been supporting missionaries and supporting the work that we do for 10 years. And I'd like to show you a few figures of what we've accomplished together. That video helps you understand how nearly a million people have been run from their own country, how they live in these terrible refugee camps, and the largest of those camps being 620,000 people. Does that give you some perspective? What's the population of your Belinda? Just multiply that. 55% of the refugees living in those camps and those places of displacement are children, and 6,100 of them are unaccompanied minors. Children. Parents are dead, and they're the lucky survivors of this violence. What has been our response together? 344,217 Rohingya people being helped by our love. On August 25th, the fires were started, and the state police, the army, they incited these terrible riots, and all of those terrible things happened, resulting in this exodus of people. On August 27th, we had a team on the ground helping those people as they crossed the river with shelter. The shelter that we're talking about, you can see in the courtyard. Did you see when you came in the blue and the orange tarps on our tables and covering the tent? That's what a family of five is given to provide shelter for their family. 4,156 of those large tarps have been given out already. You've been a part of that. 20 Rohingya community health workers have been trained by our team. 236 sanitation solutions, wells, toilets, showers, anything that we can do in order to prevent the spread of disease and parasites and increase community health, preventing death. 110 children. We've just started with education in this population. Some of you may track the work that we do on other media, and you may know that we just opened our sixth school in Kurdish Syria. There's 8,000 kids going to school who haven't been to school in 5 years. In a war zone, they're going to school today. And that's because, in part, of your support and your partnership with us. 1,704 tons of rice has been delivered. If you go out there, you can see what a family of five gets. You can see the 50-pound bag of rice, and you can see in a bowl what each person in that family will eat that day out of that rice bag. When I say these things, some of them are, I hope, upsetting. It's not feel-good stuff, because what we're talking about is people who suffer, who are at the very bottom of the human existence and experience, who don't have the things that they need. They don't have the things that my children, my three daughters, take for granted. But the great thing is that for those that we have reached, they've understood that there's a new message, that they're loved and they're not forgotten. When we love and we act, when our words and our actions are congruent, people come and ask, even hardened other religious people, just put the label on that. They come and ask, hey, who are you guys? You small Christian group that comes into these dangerous places, and you come in and you help our kids. What's with that? Well, our vision for the future is basically Luke chapter 4 or Isaiah 58, or even the sheep and the goats. That the prisoner would be visited and be cared for, that the hungry would receive food, that those who are thirsty would have clean drinking water, that those who are oppressed would be set free. That's our ultimate objective. I met this little boy while I was waiting to interview a father whose 13-year-old daughter was kidnapped and was held as a sex slave just like 5 kilometers from where we were doing the interview. I met that little boy and I thought, look into that face. When we love and we act, when love is real, what we see is transformation. We see that little boy going back to school. We see him having a meal or two per day. We see him having clothes to wear, shoes to prevent parasites from coming through his soles of his feet. On and on and on and on, these small interventions making a massive impact. Our vision for the future is a world, a place where children like that are not worried about going to sleep at night, where they know that they're in the home of their family who love them, and that tomorrow they'll go to school and present their homework to their teacher. It's that simple, and what we have experienced around this activity is that people want to know what the secret is. Who's behind all that? What's his name? And he is irresistible. Every religion in the world wants to know what the secret is when we act on the impulse of that. This little boy, he's worth it. You'll see in the back these touchable things, and you have the opportunity after the service to contribute $50 to give those things to one family of 5. If you give that, you will get one of these shirts, which of course says, to love is to act, and this one's a large, so you get this one. Great. Or you can take the book that my wife wrote it, my daughter illustrated it. It tells the story of Myanmar, one of the war zones that we work in, and it helps you describe it for your children in ways that are not graphic and upsetting. It's a read-aloud book. It's the ABCs of Myanmar with a little character named Theo to help you understand what's going on. If you contribute to this, then you can have one of these books. Who has kids or grandkids? Do you? Okay, this is for you. I won't throw it at you. I mean, I could probably get sued for that. you don't have to. There are 2 people on the table with terminals if you want to use your card, and there are envelopes for you if you'd like to contribute with a check or cash or whatever. But you can also just type 484848 and type partners in the message line, and it will open up for you the possibility to contribute to the Five Alive or to the various things that are displayed out there that we give away in a crisis situation. If you do it that way, just tell our team at the table and they'll give you one of these things as a way to remember what you've contributed to and as a thank you. I feel incredibly grateful to be invited here to be a part of the conversation we're having about what it means to follow God. I offer just one glimpse into that world. There are so many important causes and so many important things to do in the world, and as you support those things, you are stepping into the tradition I accidentally did too. When we act on the impulse of love, it is irresistible. It is transformational. And it remakes the world. And so, brothers and sisters, let's keep walking that way together. Thank you for making us a part of what you do as an exercise of compassion and action. And God bless you, and thank you very much.